Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, it's Kevin J, the best thing since bamboo. And you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Dr. Daniel Matteson, who had a shock diagnosis of multiple sclerosis just under 10 years ago. He's going to be sharing his story as the MS Doctor on Instagram, and he joins us to talk about mental health impact of living with this long-term health condition and how to support and how to, you know, get that support from friends and family with MS and talk about the treatment journey. Welcome, Daniel, to the show. How are you doing?
Hi there. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time out. You know, I think it's much appreciated.
Pleasure.
Daniel, tell us a bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. 2013, I graduated as a radiographer. So we're kind of the people who, you know, take the x-rays, take any kind of scan and whatnot, send that to the doctors, they have a good look at them. And as part of one of the jobs I got, I was asked to take part in a trial. Now, part of this trial involved an MRI scan of my head. Obviously, I thought nothing of this at the time. In fact, getting a picture of my brain seemed quite interesting, so I was all for it. It turns out, following this scan, that they'd picked up an incidental lesion on my brain, which obviously got everyone slightly worried. Following on from this, I was sent to see a couple of neurologists. A diagnosis of MS followed. So unlike many people, MS kind of found me, not the other way around. Because I know there's a lot of people, you know, they're juggling the symptoms, they're trying to work out what's going on, they're getting passed from one professional to the next. That wasn't really the case with me. So I'm quite an anomaly. Following on from this, and it's quite with regards to what we're about to talk about, the mental health side of it, it's really tough to take. Ultimately, I ended up quitting my job and I trained as a doctor. And I appreciate I'm making that sound incredibly easy. And it was absolutely far from that. But yeah, so here we are today. So Dr. Daniel with MS, yeah.
Gosh, and I've never heard of that. Like you thought, right, I'm not going to do that. I'll just become a doctor. It's like,
well, and, you know,
gosh, I mean, it's a very difficult degree, isn't it? And to study.
Yeah, it's very demanding. More so than I imagined. I don't think I was thinking very clearly after my diagnosis. I don't think I appreciated a lot of aspects. You know, I had to fund the degree myself. I wasn't eligible for any tuition loans because I already had a degree. I didn't consider that. Obviously, by the time I got accepted, I didn't really expect to get in medical school, if I'm honest. So once I got the green light, I couldn't turn back. So I just had to go with it. So yeah, the whole journey from start to finish was exhausting. From an MS perspective and a university perspective, and obviously all this compounds into your mental health, and it just becomes quite a big mess, you know.
And it's 6 years, is that right, to study medicine? Is that correct? Or is it 5 or 6 years? I can't remember.
So it's 5 years. You can do 6 if you want to do a bit of extra study. If you've got an area of interest, you can take a year out and focus on that. By this point, I'd already done a degree. I'd done 2, actually. So I just wanted to get through it as quickly as I could, you know.
Gosh, that's resilience. That's resilience, you know. Let's talk about MS. I mean, you know, it's a challenging condition. Why are you so keen to highlight the mental health problems with it?
Well, I mean, firstly, I want to kind of highlight, so not many people are aware, but so MS, it's the most common non-physically traumatic, I don't want to say non-traumatic because it's mentally traumatic, but non-physically traumatic condition in young adults. And according to the MS Trust, there's over 130,000 people in the UK with MS. moving on from that, depression is, you know, any mental health condition for that matter, is higher. There's high prevalences of this in the MS population when compared with the general population out there. And personally, I don't feel it's very well addressed. I just think it's something that kind of gets swept under the doormat, if you like. I don't know why this is the case. I think it's very much that, as much as medicine's progressed, I do think that mental health and physical health are still kind of viewed as separate entities. And I think that it kind of shows a little bit of a failing on our part, really, because, you know, with any chronic condition, the mental aspect is huge. So that you know, that's kind of where I'm at. I've experienced it, and I just feel that it needs a bit of a spotlight on it, you know?
Yeah, no, of course. And just remind us, you've just had it now for just under 10 years, is that right?
Yeah, it was January 2015. So, yeah, just over 8 years now, yeah.
Gosh, right, okay. And when you first found out, I mean, that must have been like a shock, you know, absolute shock to hear that diagnosis. And, you mm-hmm. know, what was you going through and how did you cope?
Well, when I was first informed, so obviously I sat down with the radiologist, who's obviously the doctor who looks at these images, and we discussed that obviously there's this thing on my scan, and the first thing I'm thinking is tumour. You know, I don't know why that is everybody's first thought. It's cancer, isn't it? That's the first thing that goes in my head. So when I got the MS diagnosis, in a weird way, it was kind of a relief that it wasn't killing me. But no, that doesn't take away from the fact that it was awful, you know, to say the least. It was mentally traumatizing to the point that I straight up quit my job, more or less. I just couldn't cope. I turned to alcohol. Antidepressants came into the picture. You know, I mean, one of the biggest things when you get diagnosed with MS and any chronic condition for that matter, you started on. So I'd never taken any medications. Suddenly I'm finding myself taking several medications. You know, they started me on even things as simple as vitamin D, because there's a loose link between vitamin D and MS. So all of a sudden I'm waking up every morning, I'm taking multiple pills. I'm injecting myself every week because that was the first drug I had to take, which kind of suppressed the inflammatory kind of response of MS. So that obviously played havoc with my mental health. It's quite hard, you know. It's
of course, there's acceptance of acknowledging the diagnosis. It's obviously you had a challenging time. How long did it take for you to acknowledge that this is what's happening to you?
Personally, probably about a year before I accepted it. I was into my third year of medical school before I told anybody I had it. I don't know if that was the stigma. I'm going to go as far as say ashamed, you know. You're a young, healthy individual, and overnight you become disabled. It's not easy kind of to – something. It's a bitter pill to swallow, put it that way. So I think overall, several years, yeah.
Gosh. Is there good support in place to help to, you know, people come to terms with the health diagnosis?
I'm going to say yes, in the sense that I'm more aware of them now I've got the disease. So there's things like the MS Trust, the MS Society, there's other charitable bodies. MS Together is quite a good one as well. At the time, I wasn't aware of any of these. So when I was diagnosed, I felt very alone, which, again, probably.
I was going to ask you about this, yeah, to see if there was that support there for you. But yeah, you were probably so embroiled in what is going on, it's just too much to take on.
It was. And I'd actually missed this from the beginning. I'd relocated to Edinburgh. So I was living by myself. My family were miles away, hundreds of miles away. I was literally, when I say by myself, I was by myself. Didn't tell anybody. I didn't want to worry my family back home, so I bottled it all up to myself. So obviously I'm living with this newfound illness.
Oh, so no one knew about it, basically?
No, not for some time, no.
Okay.
So the whole thing was incredibly traumatic, yeah. And obviously, your mental health just takes a hit constantly because you get new symptoms every day. More, well, I was at the beginning anyway. I was getting new things coming and going, and you know, you think the wheelchair is around the corner, for example. I mean, that's where I thought I was headed straight away, and that's a very hard thing to take when you've just a week earlier been a, you know, you've gone to the gym, you're playing football, things like that. It's a life changer. It really is.
No, absolutely. When did you, at what point did you disclose to family and friends about the condition?
When I left my job in Edinburgh, I moved back home. And that was kind of when it became apparent. My legs started dragging, for example. I can remember asking my dad if we could go for a walk just so I could show him how bad it was. And this was when, you know, they knew nothing about MS. You know, there's no one in my family who has it. They don't know anybody else who has it. So they knew nothing. So obviously they were petrified. I was petrified. It was just a whole household of what's going on kind of thing. All we knew is I've got to take this injection every week and hope that that keeps it at bay. You know, it was, as far as the mental health goes, though, there was nothing. There was nothing at all, which this is the sad part. I really do think that the need to be viewed in the same light, physical health and mental health. I don't know if it's a case of I'm a neurologist, I don't deal with mental health, I'm not a psychiatrist kind of attitude, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't. If that is the case, it's wrong, in my opinion. I do think because, you know, it was me who noticed. It was me and my wife, actually, who noticed that I was not coping mentally. And I went to my GP. So that was kind of initiated with no assistance really from my care team, you know. So that probably should need addressing, I guess, you know.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. I mean, mental health can actually have a bearing on physical health. I've spoken to people that have experienced depression and clinical depression, whereby it's, you know, there's paralysis. Can't get out of bed, won't do anything. There's a lot of self-neglect. Because you're so low, mental health is so low, your status. So I can totally understand, you know, that people, you know, to want mental health separately to physical health. But, you know, I believe there's some kind of link somehow or another.
Definitely. Yeah. I think with any chronic illness, you're going to get mental health impairments. Like everybody with a chronic condition, in my opinion, will undergo at least one episode of depression in their life. In my opinion.
Absolutely.
You're human, and it is a big change to your life. Even the diagnosis itself is such a shock to the system, and it, you know, it's your life changes. It really does.
And your outlook as well in life, isn't it? And appreciating day to day.
Yeah.
You know?
You kind of, your life goals kind of go out the window. And it's more about, will I be able to walk in the morning? Will I be able to walk on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that kind of thing? You're looking ahead. Can I go out with friends? Probably not, because I have to take my medicines and that's going to make me feel rough. And again, everything changes. You just got to adapt to a whole new life, you know?
Of course. Have you found your friends to be quite supportive?
Yeah. I mean, there's some I fell out of touch with. Whether or not that's because I was diagnosed and stopped going out, I don't know. Like I say, I changed careers. I went to medical school. I moved to another city and things like that happened. So, you know, I think there was a lot of things at play there. But yeah, I've got a very supportive friendship group. Yeah, definitely.
That's brilliant. We're just going to a quick ad break.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Daniel, thank you for that. Tell us a bit more about how maybe relapsing, remitting multiple sclerosis affects you day to day.
So the thing is, MS varies day to day. You know, there's a lot of things that can play on your MS. I mean, even things like how tired you're feeling, that can exacerbate your symptoms. It's important to say, and I'm not alone here, a lot of symptoms with MS are what we consider invisible. Nobody can see them. From the outside, I look perfectly healthy. You know, I've heard stories of people that park in a disabled bay, you know, they can stand up, they're not in a wheelchair, but, you know, they might only be able to walk, I don't know, certain short distances before they have to sit down. But people can't see that. So they're questioning, why are you parking this beer? That kind of thing. And I think that needs to be highlighted with MS. That's a big thing. It's an invisible disease. One of the biggest symptoms I have is fatigue. Fatigue is massive. Some days it's really bad. When I feel extra tired, you know, my balance is affected. My walking isn't great in terms of distance. And one thing I do suffer with is foot drop. So if I'm driving to work and there's a lot of traffic on the road, for example, and I'm hit brake, accelerator, brake, accelerator, by the time I park at work, I can barely lift my foot. So straight away, your day's off to a bad start. That again can vary day to day. There's an accident on the road. You can't plan for these things. So you just have to take every day as it comes. And that kind of is how it is, as brutal as that sounds.
No, of course, of course. Are they talking generally the number of symptoms? So you speak about fatigue. Are there other symptoms as well of MS?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, numbness, tingling, weakness, and this can affect any part of the body at random as well, you know. I've got, optic neuritis, so that affects my vision. So my vision's a bit blurry. My hands, I had a relapse once where I couldn't use my hands, and now my left hand is permanently, I wouldn't say numb, I can feel it, but it's reduced sensation. It's things like that where you just kind of have to get on with your new kind of way of living, I guess. And the thing with relapsing, remitting, what people are unaware of, when you have a relapse, you're visibly unwell. Then your symptoms kind of die down and people think you're well again. That's not the case. For one, when your body's recovering, you're exhausted because your body is using all of your energy to fix the damage that's being caused by the MS. So that feeds into the fatigue. You know, and then obviously there's everything else that goes with it. You know, your mental health goes down when you have a relapse. If it's bad enough, they'll put you on steroids. There's more medications to add. And, you know, it all rolls into one kind of.
Of course, of course. And taking those medications, they may have side effects as well. Is that right?
They do, yeah.
It's unfortunately, it depends on the person as well. Some people are different to other people. Some people might get certain symptoms. Is that right? Some people might not. Depending on the, you know, medication as well and the side effects.
Yeah, so there's common side effects that most people get. So when my first medication, I used to get serious flu symptoms. So I'd take on a Friday knowing I had the weekend and I would be in bed most of the weekend. Obviously, I wasn't contagious of anything, but as far as my body was concerned, I had the flu every weekend. So that was, again, that kind of fed into my way of living, that I just realized I wasn't going out on a Friday or a Saturday anymore. I don't know if it affects everyone in the same way. As I say, I'm sure some people get it in a more severe and less severe kind of fashion, but that's how it affected me, yeah.
Does it affect sleep as well?
Steroids do. Steroids really do, yeah. You just don't sleep, and you eat a lot as well. When I was on steroids, that was bad. My first medication didn't really affect my sleep. If anything, it made me sleep more because I just felt unwell. Yeah.
Do you know other people with MS, or have maybe looked into groups or networking with people that have MS as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've recently become an ambassador for the MS Trust.
Fantastic.
So that's really rewarding. I also have an Instagram page myself, which I obviously share what it's like living with and working as a doctor with MS. So if anyone is interested in following, that is the MS doctor. So that's the dot MS dot doctor. You're very welcome to follow me. But yeah, I think having these kind of networks is very, very important. You know, the way my outlook today compared to when I was diagnosed could not be any different. And I think that's a lot to do with the people I know. You know, I've got a lot to say for support networks, yeah.
It sounds like that actually helped you. It's been one of the, you know, most, one of the effective methods of support as well. And vice versa, you give back, I'm sure, to people as well with MS. So there's that kind of discussion, you know, about the effects and what you're going through and sharing and that kind of thing.
I think a lot of it's inspiring each other. You know, I see people doing things all the time and I'm like, wow, that is... good going, you know. And it's not just for MS, you know, there's a lot of chronic conditions where people refuse to to give up. And I think that that says a lot about a person. And having these communities, whether it's social media, whether you're meeting them in person, just hearing the stories and how they've overcome their illness, it really does inspire. And I think it's great.
I mean, we've discussed this a few times, but you know, why is it so important that you know that the mental well-being of MS patients is considered?
I think you feel helpless following your diagnosis, and as you said yourself, you know, you stop looking after yourself. I've been there, you know, and I think if without people there to help and support and understanding is huge. So the MS Trust published a report. What was it called? Life Changing, I believe. I believe that's what it was called, yeah. And it suggests over half of MS sufferers will experience isolation, loneliness, depression. Don't quote me, I believe it said 17% will experience suicidal ideation.
Do you know what? I didn't want to mention it, I'll be honest with you, because I was assuming that when someone finds out the diagnosis, everyone responds differently.
Yeah.
Some people don't take it so well. Some people will using methods, like for example, you've mentioned it. This, you know, maybe drinking or whatever it might be. And so, some people will just feel that it's the end, unfortunately, and go down that. Have you known anyone or heard of anyone that has taken their life because of the diagnosis?
Fortunately, I don't know anybody personally. Unfortunately. I've had these thoughts personally, and I think most people probably have, if they're being honest. You know, I've never acted on them, fortunately. You know, it's always just kind of, like I said, when you're first diagnosed, you feel empty and you feel your life is done. You just think, right, I'm going to get worse and worse and worse. Nothing's going to be able to stop this. There's no cure. You know, my career's done. Suddenly, you're left thinking, what's the point? I was there. I think going to medical school gave me a purpose. I think learning more about the condition also helps. And I think talking to people is massive. It's important to know you're not alone, because I felt very alone, you know. So having that network is I can't stress enough how important that is, yeah.
No, absolutely. You mentioned self-neglect. Is that a topic that comes up as well in terms of how people might unfortunately respond to the diagnosis?
Yeah, and again, I don't think that's exclusive to MS. I think a lot of people, it's hard for people to accept it. That's the problem. I think accepting such a diagnosis is very difficult to do. And you kind of just feel a bit in limbo. You know it's there, but you don't want to acknowledge it. And everything just falls apart, I'll be honest. When I was diagnosed, for instance, I stopped going to the gym. I just started eating what I wanted. It was kind of like comfort eating because I didn't care anymore, to put it bluntly. You know, I would drink, I don't know the volumes, but a lot. I don't drink now.
That's good. That's really good.
Again, I think it's important if you recognize something is not good for you, specifically if you do have an illness, because it's certainly not, it's not even good for healthy people, never mind someone who's got an illness. It's important to eradicate that, or at least limit it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And it's fantastic that you've, because it's difficult, isn't it? I've spoken to people that just generally drink, and it might not be because of a condition or anything like that, but they've got they depend a lot on alcohol, alcohol dependency, basically. How did you get yourself through that?
Again, I think a lot of it was, I hit this kind of point in my life where I was like, are you going to let this consume you, or are you going to do something about it? And this is kind of where the whole medical school thing came from. It is kind of hard to put my finger on the exact moment I thought I'm going to change all of this. I think it was kind of like a gradual process, if you like. Do you know what I mean? So obviously, as I'm trying to navigate where I'm going to take my life at this point. Because I'm settled in my job and things like that. And suddenly one day everything falls apart. So then I need to kind of think, right, is this all I'm going to do now? Am I just going to drink until the end, or am I going to? And I think it was a gradual kind of process. And I don't think anybody wakes up one day and just, you know, snaps fingers and thinks, right, that's it, I've changed my life. And hats off if you do, because that's impressive, very impressive. I think it's constant exposure to something that really kind of makes you view the world differently. You know, I mean, a lot of things like that. I wouldn't consider myself overly religious, but when I was diagnosed, you know, you really do question things. You know, how can somebody let this happen to me? I've done nothing wrong with anybody. That kind of, you know, there's a lot of things that go through your head. There's a lot of unreasonable things as well. So, it's just a minefield, if I'm honest, you know.
And I think you're right. It's not just this. This is if when someone gets news of something that's very shocking about their health, I'm sure, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people go through those challenges and those discussions in their own mind about and questioning, you know, why has this happened to me? Then you kind of, some people might isolate themselves more from other people. And you kind of go into yourself, isn't it? And that's what's a little bit dangerous when you go a bit too into yourself.
And I think a lot of that comes, like you say, from the shame. Because I had a group of friends, for instance, you know, we'd all play football, we'd all go to the gym and things like that together. We're very active. And then suddenly I'm kind of, you feel like the odd one out, you know, suddenly you're classed as disabled. So I went overnight from I'm part of this group to actually I'm no longer, I can't do what you can do anymore. And that's how you feel. And it does, you lose a sense of identity, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, of course, of course. Talk to us about the effects on family and friends, because obviously it's awful someone going through it, but family and friends, the external circle, or maybe the friends that are around still, or, and I'm not talking just your family, I'm talking just generally from what you've seen of other people, what are some of the effects and, you know, the reactions that family go through?
Again, I think that would vary family to family, obviously, because, you know, we're all our own kind of people. I think educating them certainly would help. I'm going from my experience. My family knew nothing about MS. They couldn't really support me in any real way because they had no idea what was going on. You know, they could sit with me and they couldn't tell me it was going to be okay because they didn't know. And I'd get angry. That's another thing. Because I would, you know, like you're dealing with this monster inside of you and people are telling you it's going to be okay. And it's not. That's how I felt. So I think educating family and friends about what you're actually dealing with, understanding. A lot of people don't understand. And I'm very shocked, actually, how few people actually know anything about MS. Like I said, it's one of the most common, well, it is the most common neurological in young adults, yet nobody seems to know anything about it. For example, when I couldn't go out because of my medication, my friends just thought, I don't want to bother us anymore. They didn't know anything about it. And I think if there was more understanding out there, I think friends and family would be a lot more able to support, you know. It's quite a hard one, really, because I think everybody would react differently. It's quite hard to kind of put an answer to that question.
Mm. No, of course, of course. We're just going to another quick break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Daniel, you know, the one of the issues it sounds like is family and people, just generally friends, having that understanding over conditions such as multiple sclerosis. What kind of support would you like to see out there for friends and family to maybe help in that area?
And I know this is obviously I'm speaking in an ideal world. There's very little funding in our health service today. It would be quite nice if there were sessions for families to attend. You know, because when I went, I would go and see the MS nurse or the neurologist. My family, you know, they can attend, but they're not really involved in the consultation. I think some targeted education, you know, how to support somebody going through it's trauma, you know, it's trauma. That's the bottom line. So how do you support someone going through a traumatic experience? And I think helping people understand that process would be the first thing, you know, because you've got your denial, grieving, kind of everything. I went through every emotion you can possibly imagine, and they had no idea how to support that. Again, it's tricky because, you know, we could go on forever about things the NHS could do slightly better. You know, for example, I'd also say that you should see a psychiatrist alongside your neurologist upon diagnosis just to check on your mental health. But again, it's all hypothetical. I appreciate the NHS isn't in the position to do that. I think we are in a position that, like you say, it's an education problem. That's where we are.
Maybe more leaflets and online training. And if I know having one-to-one sessions or training sessions may be impractical in some areas, but, you know, maybe that would be helpful, you know?
Yeah. I mean, leaflets are great, but, you know, you need something interactive to really take something from it, in my opinion. But yeah, online training would be good. Yeah, definitely. Something like that. Just so that, you know, like my family didn't even know what MS was. So how can you support somebody when you don't actually know what it is they've got? So do you know what I mean? But yeah, an online kind of education tool, that something like that would be good.
Mm. Talk to us about your typical day and what helps you get through the day, especially managing your mental well-being.
So I exercise every day, firstly. That's paramount. I bought a spinning bike, so my balance is terrible. I can't really run anymore without it genuinely looks like I've had about 10 pints, so I avoid that. But I go spinning at least once a day. I think exercise, it's great for your mental health in general, so do that. Eradicate anything that's not good for you, in my opinion. You know, you don't want to smoke. Evidence has proven that smoking makes MS worse. So if you smoke, bluntly, try and limit at the very least your alcohol. As I've said, like, it's a toxin. It's also a depressant. So if you're feeling low and you're going to keep drinking, well, you know, the way I look at it, you know, the short-term high is not worth the long-term low that follows. I think finally with that question is, like, just forgive yourself when you've had a bad day. You know, cut yourself some slack, because some days you do feel rough. Some days you can barely get out of bed. And I'm, you know, it sounds kind of hypocritical because I'm the opposite. You know, I'm my own worst critic, and, you know, I can't just sit around. But sometimes you need to just give yourself a bit of time to chill. You know, if you have a bad day and you push yourself through that bad day, it'll very quickly turn into a bad week, because you'll just make your symptoms 10 times worse, and it'll drag on. I think that's the take home there. Something I'm trying to learn myself. Yeah.
Do you have a journal at all?
So I do my Instagram. So I kind of.
Oh, that is like a journal, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how it's kind of therapeutic as well. Yeah. So I like to think that I'm helping others, and obviously others are helping me, but it's nice for me to do it in that kind of way. So it's kind of like, it's an electronic journal. Yeah. Essentially. Yeah.
Have you had people reach out to you on Instagram to maybe talk about what they're going through or anything like that?
A lot, yeah. I do have quite a lot of people. Obviously, I would never give medical information out over.
No.
I do appreciate that sometimes some people just need to talk, and I'm happy to do that, because that was me at one point, and I didn't have anyone to talk to. So it's probably why I made the page, just so I can kind of, if I had something like this when I was diagnosed, I know it would have helped. So I like to think that if I could change one person's view, and that is, you know, that's brilliant, isn't it?
Absolutely. Have you had people that have been newly diagnosed reach out to you?
Yeah. Quite honestly, it's quite regular that someone will message me and say, sadly, you know, you'll get some strange requests like, can I send you my hospital letter and can you read it for me and tell me? And obviously I can't do that. But if somebody says, look, I'm really feeling sad, and oh, I've had this symptom, that symptom, what do you think I should do? You know, what I would recommend, if anyone is listening, if you do feel that you're having strange symptoms, unexplained symptoms, but by that I mean, you know, tingling, numbness, weakness that comes and goes without warning, write them down, you know, write what it is, how does it affect you, how long has it lasted, has it gone away, if it has it come back? Take that to a doctor, because you can present a picture of MS. MS has a very characteristic way of presenting in that sense. Symptoms are very sporadic, they come without warning, and they'll just vanish, and they're very random. They'll affect your eyesight, then they'll affect your movement, they'll affect your skin, you'll be itchy, or you have burning sensations, and they're all very random. If you start getting things like this, I would be, write them down, take them to a doctor, take them to your GP and ask for a referral, get a scan. Again, I had a scan, very fortunately, and that's how it was picked up. Don't think I would have went to my GP with my symptoms, which is very worrying, you know? I bet there's a lot of people in that position.
Oh, of course.
But the main thing is, because it's an invisible illness, even you yourself play it down, you know? And I think it's important to take it seriously, because it is real, and just because you're ignoring it doesn't mean it's going to go away.
You know? No, of course. Are you in regular contact with your GP?
Yes, I do see my GP quite a lot. Fortunately, I'm not on any antidepressants and things anymore. I do think that, like you say, my coping mechanism has increased greatly. So obviously my communication with my GP has decreased from that aspect. Just not drinking, exercising, eating well, looking after myself, trying to get some rest, sleeping, getting good night's sleep, just everything. I know it sounds small things, but they really help, and they all compound each other. So if you do all of these things, you'll be shocked. Give it a week even, and the change, it really, you know, you feel it.
No, absolutely. If you could change one thing about people's understanding of MS, what would it be?
Oh, tricky one. Okay. It's a very heterogeneous condition. What I mean by that is every patient's different. Yeah, you'll never meet two patients with the same symptoms. It'll be very, very rare that you do. Everyone's got, you know, we all follow a different clinical course. We have different symptoms. They last different lengths. We've got different experiences. You know, we've even got different responses to drugs. Everybody's different. That's the thing. It's, and I think everyone, again, mental health, some people suffer more than others. So you've got to take everybody for them as a person. I think people think of MS, and again, I probably wasn't too dissimilar before I was diagnosed. I associated MS with wheelchair, you know? If you weren't in a wheelchair, you don't have MS. That kind of naive, kind of almost ignorant attitude towards it. It's uneducated attitude, really, isn't it? That's kind of what it was. And I think just understanding a little bit would be good, yeah.
I think films as well. I think films in the past have depicted it as, you know, like someone in a wheelchair and really kind of intense symptoms, which might not have helped, obviously.
Well, I think the thing with MS, you know, so if I went and stood next to somebody in a lift, from the outside, I look fine. So they wouldn't ever consider me with MS. But then if somebody comes in after me in a wheelchair, they'll be like, oh, he's obviously got something wrong. And, you know, they always put the worst case scenario with the condition. But how do you not know that you haven't walked past 10 people today who have MS, but they just don't manifest it in the same way? So I think it's important to appreciate that there's a massive spectrum. Some people with MS, you can't actually tell. There's different types of MS as well. So that obviously feeds into it. But I mean, that's a whole other discussion. But yeah, just appreciate that everybody with MS is different, they will present different, they will have different experiences, and, you know, just because they don't look disabled doesn't mean that they're not. That's a really big one, yeah.
I think it's that kind of situation where, you know, you just don't know what's going on, you know, within someone's world, unless sometimes they might tell you. Some things are not obvious as well, you know.
Certainly, yeah.
You know, and symptoms fluctuate by the sound of things. It sounds like... and like you've mentioned, you've got your good days and you've got your bad days. And so no 2 days are the same, basically. And it sounds like you appreciate when you wake up and you've got low level symptoms, it's like you must feel really good about that in terms of.
You learn to make the most of those days. Yeah, you really do. Going back to what we've just said about not seeing it, the disease that is. When I said I told people in my third year of medical school, so I knew these people for 3 years. We were all very good friends. And when I told them I had MS, you know, they couldn't believe it. They'd known me for 3 years and they had no idea. So that's what I'm saying. I looked to them, quotation marks, healthy, normal, whatever you want to call it. And the minute I said, actually, I have MS, nobody could believe it. And that's what I mean. There was a little bit more kind of education around that topic. maybe the reaction I got would have been different.
Is it difficult to plan ahead because you just don't know how you're going to be some days? Does it make that difficult?
Yeah, I mean, it does. The way I kind of think about it now is I plan as if I don't have MS and I just go with it. And if I can't do something, I'll do it the day after. And I might get there slower, you know. Medical school, for example, you know, there was nothing saying I couldn't. I might have got to my fourth year, had a big relapse, had to take the year off. It would have then took me an extra year, that kind of thing. I'm still going to hopefully get to that goal. It's going to take me longer. That's how I now plan things. So if I want to do something, I just won't put a timeline on it. That's kind of the best way to do it. Because otherwise, you're just giving up on all your goals, aren't you?
And yeah, yeah.
It's not really a way to live.
No, of course, of course. What do you think needs to change to help the public and health professionals better understand the complexity of MS symptoms?
I think if there's more coverage, it's not really talked about, you know? You don't really hear. I personally didn't. Before I had MS, I didn't know a great deal. There's never any programs that even discuss MS. And if they do, it's always the worst case. Nobody actually visits it for what it is. I think things like the MS Trust, the MS Society and things like that, it would be nice if they were able to. I mean, I appreciate the do incredible jobs. I think people need to kind of, I don't really know what I'm trying to say here. It would be nice if more of their information could be distributed. I don't really know how that could be done. I'm not pretending to know the answer. I think they're excellent sources of information. And if it could be more out in the public domain, that would certainly help. Again, that's kind of what I'm trying to do with my Instagram as well, from a personal perspective. You know, I've got kind of the unique experience of being a doctor and a patient, so I try and put that forward. And you know, so I just think it's about raising awareness. And I think every MS sufferer has something to give in that respect.
Absolutely. Have you made really good friends now with people that you network with that have got MS?
Oh, certainly. You wouldn't believe it. So I have a friend now in Sydney, Australia. I'm going for some treatment. It actually starts next week. I don't know how much time we've got, so I'm not going to get too much into it, but it's quite an intense treatment. It's a stem cell transplant. And I've learned that there's a girl who I've recently talked to. She's going through it. She gets admitted the day before me. So we're going to kind of go through it virtually together, FaceTime and things like that.
Okay.
So I've met her on the other side of the world through social media. And that's just one example. I've got friends all over the world now, people I chat to. It's changed my outlook completely, you know.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's really good. Yeah. It sounds like it's very positive as well for your own mental well-being to share things with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And obviously hearing their experiences, so it's kind of like, oh, it's not just me, actually. Everybody with MS goes through kind of a similar kind of phase, if you like.
Have you been helped with the complex symptoms of MS? I mean, how, basically, have you been helped with it?
In terms of work, occupational health, I've got involved. So they're aware that obviously my walking distance isn't great. So, you know, I've kind of been based around the hospital in jobs that require less. So, for example, I'd never make a surgeon because I physically couldn't stand long enough. And they're aware of that. So they've tailored my roles to jobs more suited to what I can physically do. So I've certainly been helped from a work perspective from that. Obviously, I've got an MS team as well. So when I do need help in terms of, I don't know, if I ever relapse, you know, they'll prescribe me the steroids and just that kind of thing. And I've always got someone on hand. I've got a very supportive team in that respect. On the back of that, a bit of advice I'd give anyone, because I know people who don't tell their employer. I really think that's dangerous. I get so much support from my employer. And if I didn't tell them, you know, the days you don't feel well, they'd probably be questioning, oh, off again, what's going on, that kind of thing. Where if they're aware of what you're going through, it just, you know, and I just think being honest is obviously a good thing in general. But I think you'd be shocked how much people are supportive when you open up to people. That's what I'd say. That's something I learned. Probably too late. I wish I knew that a bit sooner. Probably would have saved myself.
But I don't think you should be hard on yourself. I think, you know, in the beginning, you were trying to accept it yourself, let alone try and explain to other people. You know, so and unfortunately, it would have been nice to have that network around, but then you didn't feel comfortable coming forwards, isn't it? So it's an unfortunate thing, but you've come a long way from that now, which is fantastic.
I never regret. I never regret anything. You just got to take it as what it was. And, you know, at that point in time, I just wasn't in the headspace I am now. And that's just what it is, you know.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time today. You have mentioned your Instagram. Do you want to mention it again? I'm just thinking about if people want to reach out to you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So my Instagram, so I'm the MS doctor. So that's the.ms.doctor. My name's Daniel Matteson. So you'll find me on Instagram or Facebook. Please feel free to follow me. Sorry. That'd be brilliant.
And thank you for your time today. Much appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.